Hello, and welcome back to True Crime Catlawyer and our coverage of the trial and Manny Ellis' death. This week's episode covers week 3 of the trial, starting with the continued direct testimony of forensic pathologist Dr. Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell walked the jury through Manny's autopsy photos. He also talked about the proximate cause of death versus a mechanism of death. The mechanism is the how, and it's part of the overall cause of death. In Manny's case, the mechanisms of death were hypoxia, acidosis, and cardiac output. Mitchell agreed that Manny had a toxic level of meth in his system, but Mitchell was clear that the altercation with police was the intervening cause of Manny's death. And here's how he explained his opinion. Mitchell said that before Manny came into contact with Burbank and Collins, he was just walking down the street without any issues, even with a toxic level of meth in his system. Mitchell said Manny's death was not an overdose. Mitchell acknowledged that Manny's enlarged heart and the meth made it hard for him to recover, but absent the actions of Burbank, Collins, and Rankin, those things wouldn't have killed Manny. Manny died with meth in his system, but he didn't die from meth. On cross-examination, Burbank's attorneys focused on the other medical conditions in Manny's medical records, while Collins' attorney focused on how much money Mitchell had been paid for his involvement in the case. Collins' attorney also tried to establish that Mitchell was biased because he was a self-proclaimed advocate for Black Americans, and he has a podcast about deaths in law enforcement custody. But Mitchell pushed back, telling Collins' attorney that his podcast wasn't just about Black men, and the reason behind his podcast was bringing awareness to the need for more data on in-custody deaths. Collins' attorney was the first to bring up excited delirium with Dr. Mitchell. And before we get into Dr. Mitchell's response, I want to dive deeper into what excited delirium is and how it's used, because it's going to come up a lot in this trial. Excited delirium is an extremely controversial term rooted in racism. This term has absolutely no scientific basis, and there's zero consensus about the actual definition of excited delirium. So why do we still use this term, and where did it come from? Excited delirium was first used by a forensic pathologist in 1985. He used excited delirium to explain a series of sudden deaths in cocaine users, most of whom had been in police custody when they died. The term has always been used disproportionately against Black people, and it's only been used in the context of interactions with law enforcement. Although there isn't a consensus about what excited delirium actually is, here are the hallmark things you may have heard of. Superhuman strength, sweating, impervious to pain, exhibiting aggressive behavior, and making guttural sounds. If you've been listening to our trial coverage, you know that some of these symptoms have been used to describe Manny on the night he died. Law enforcement officers across the United States are routinely taught that excited delirium is a, quote, condition characterized by the abrupt onset of aggression and distress, typically in the setting of illicit substance abuse, often culminating in sudden death, end quote. And here's why this is problematic. None of the major professional medical associations recognize excited delirium as an actual medical condition. That's right. The American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and the National Association of Medical Examiners have all rejected excited delirium as a cause of death. And the American College of Emergency Physicians just approved withdrawing its 2009 paper supporting the term on October 12, 2023. Part of the rejection is based on the lack of consensus regarding criteria for excited delirium, along with the fact that the hallmark symptoms are based on racist tropes of Black men being stronger than white men and the incorrect belief that Black people feel less pain. The American Psychiatric Association believes excited delirium is, quote, too nonspecific to meaningfully describe and convey information about a person, end quote. The APA also believes more scientific research and data collection is needed. The American Medical Association's stance is that current medical evidence doesn't support excited delirium as an official diagnosis. The AMA also made it clear that excited delirium should not be the sole justification for law enforcement to use excessive force. They believe that excited delirium has been misapplied in law enforcement-related deaths of black and brown people, and the term, quote, inaccurately and selectively combines various signs and symptoms from real medical emergencies, thereby creating a blanket diagnosis that appears medically legitimate at first glance, end quote. Essentially, excited delirium has become a catch-all slash scapegoat after a person has a violent interaction with law enforcement and dies. On October 14, 2023, California became the first state to ban doctors and medical examiners from attributing deaths to excited delirium. Coroners and medical examiners can't list excited delirium on a person's death certificate or in the autopsy report, and law enforcement will no longer be allowed to use the term to describe a person's behavior in any incident report. Any testimony that refers to excited delirium won't be allowed in civil court. This law takes effect in January 2024. So that was a lot of background information, but the main point is this. Medically trained professionals should be the primary decision makers in the management of medical emergencies, not law enforcement. Okay, so getting back to Dr. Mitchell's testimony. Dr. Mitchell testified that excited delirium wasn't the cause of Manny's death, and it wasn't a diagnosis recognized in the medical community. Meanwhile, Mitchell's cause of death, violent subdual restraint, was a generally accepted cause of death in the medical community. Rankin's attorney focused on Mitchell's credentials and expertise, highlighting that Mitchell wasn't licensed to practice medicine in the state of Washington, and he wasn't present for the autopsy. Mitchell testified that meth doesn't directly cause hypoxia, but it can have an effect on a person's respiratory system. Rankin's attorney focused in on Mitchell's cause of death. He asserted that positional asphyxia was contested in the medical community, and there are articles suggesting that positional asphyxia doesn't cause hypoxia. But Mitchell explained that the hypoxia wasn't just about Manny's position. It was more complex and nuanced than that. Mitchell explained that although he didn't know the exact amount of time, weight, and pressure that were applied to Manny's back while he was hobbled, being hobbled in a prone position was a huge risk factor for hypoxia. The next expert witness to testify was David Hallamore. You may remember from an earlier episode that Hallamore was supposed to testify early on in the case, but there were objections from the defense attorneys about his ability to be considered as an expert, as well as the transcript he created from the videos in this case. Before Hallamore could testify, he went through a voir dire process with each of the attorneys. Basically, he was asked a bunch of questions so the judge could decide whether he'd be allowed to testify. Hallamore is a forensic audio expert who utilizes the skill of critical listening, which he explains involves the ability to accurately hear speech through noise. Hallamore described for the attorneys what he considered to be the difference between screaming and yelling, which was one of the main contentions in his transcript. Hallamore explained that screaming is a, quote, vocal burst, mostly involuntary, with little to no speech, end quote, and it's unintelligible by nature. A yell, on the other hand, has a component of speech to it. Hallamore then demonstrated his methods for the court, still outside the presence of the jury. When voir dired by Burbank's attorney, Hallamore conceded that his method wasn't an exact science. Voir dire by Rankin's attorney focused on training and qualifications that made it possible for Hallamore to create the transcript. Hallamore again conceded that no certification exists for critical listening and that he didn't have any specialized ability to hear, although he did state he has excellent hearing, which was tested 3 weeks prior to his testimony. Ultimately, the judge felt that Mr. Hallamore's transcript was important as it put everything into a timeline for the jury. Hallamore's direct testimony consisted of him playing the clips for the jury while they followed along with the transcript Hallamore had created. Although majority of the day was spent discussing whether or not Hallamore could testify and provide the jury with a transcript, he only spent about an hour and a half testifying on the witness stand. The next witness was Seth Cowden, a third eyewitness who took a video while he was out delivering pizzas on the night of Manny's death. Cowden described a quote-unquote fistfight between officers and Manny, and he witnessed Manny being tased. He described Manny's fearful screams during the altercation, and he testified that he never saw Manny throw any punches or be aggressive towards the officers. Cowden said that he thought the encounter was over when the officers handcuffed him. Cowden had recorded the video in Snapchat, and he testified that he sent the video to his parents, his manager at Domino's, and some of his friends. Cowden said that he reached out to Manny's family attorney, James Bible, about his video after he saw a news article about Manny's case. The prosecution also asked Cowden about his vision, as he's unable to see out of his right eye, a condition he was born with. Cowden testified that despite this, his vision in the left eye was excellent. On cross, defense attorneys were quick to jump on Cowden's vision. Cowden admitted that he doesn't have good depth perception, but he also explained that this simply meant he had a different form of depth perception due to the lack of vision in his right eye. Like they did with witnesses McDowell and Lowry, the defense attorneys tried to point out what they felt were inconsistencies between Cowden's testimony at trial and the prior statements that Cowden gave to law enforcement. This included whether or not Manny was actually hit by the door of the officer's patrol car and the distance that the patrol car was with respect to the sidewalk. Another eyewitness was called after Cowden finished testifying. This witness, Ayanna Maling, aka Ayanna White, was living in the home where the Vivint doorbell camera footage was recorded. Maling said that all of the windows in her house were closed on the night of Manny's death, but her house was old, so the windows were single-paned, meaning she could hear the altercation between Manny and officers. Maling testified that she saw Manny being kicked and punched by officers. She could hear Manny say he couldn't breathe and saw him trying to twist away from the grips of the officers. Maling testified that she heard the taser being fired at least twice, and she heard Manny say that he couldn't breathe 4 to 5 times. She testified that she never saw Manny hit or strike the officers. On cross, Maling conceded that she only saw each of the officers, Burbank and Collins, one at a time, so she couldn't tell them apart. Maling also testified that she couldn't see whether any officers were actually on top of Manny, but she did see at least one officer holding on to Manny with their arms. Steve Wilkins, a forensic manager for the Pierce County Sheriff's Department, testified about his role on the night Manny died. Wilkins' role was to document the crime scene. It was not his job to conduct any kind of investigation. Majority of his testimony centered around the photos he took at the scene on the night Manny died. Like a lot of experts who've already testified, Wilkins essentially testified to authenticate the crime scene photos that the prosecution wanted to admit into evidence. Later in the week, Grant Fredericks was recalled by the prosecution. You might remember that Fredericks previously testified in order to lay the foundation for prosecutors to be able to play the eyewitness videos and to authenticate them. This time, Fredericks was there to show the jury the composite video he created with all the videos from the night Manny died. The week ended with a very brief snippet of testimony from Fredericks. The next week of trial will continue with Fredericks' testimony.